morning, Rick.
Happy to be with you again this morning, as usual. Our show, Temple Health, is about our interests as holistic physicians, our interests as spiritual beings, our interests as people who want to enjoy life and live an authentic life. We have a wide range of topics. We interview authors. Today our book is going to be The Genie in Your Genes, Epigenetic Medicine and the New Biology of Intention by Dawson Church, Ph.D. So I didn't know this book was coming to the show until it came, and it's a culmination of a wide range of topics that we've done on the show and that I've done in my life for many years. Dawson Church is an author with hundreds of books to his name, and it appears to me that he has settled now into the field of energy psychology and energy medicine. Thank goodness. Thank goodness for me, and thank goodness for all of us, because Dawson is a bridge. Dawson is a individual who is able to present information that about a topic that wherever you sit looking at the topic, you need to hear it. Means if you're against a topic, it's brought together in a way that can help you understand it relative to our consensus reality, such as the scientific viewpoint or the medical viewpoint. If you're for the topic, then it brings the information in a way that makes you always question what you're thinking. When I was a young man, a puppy, and even before medical school, I remember Carl Simonton and his work with visualization and how radical it seemed. Visualization, moving the immune system through visualization, followed this and many other aspects of mind-body medicine, the fields of psychoneuroimmunology and anti-aging, all leading to the fact that our consciousness is a major factor in our health, our life, and the way this world is. And this is something that's completely ignored by my medical training and by conventional medicine. And this is something that's completely accepted by the field of energy medicine and energy psychology and all the indigenous medicines on the planet. And Dawson is moving us beyond the physical and the chemical healing aspects into the energetic aspects. The energetic is the blueprint for our physical. We've had, when I look at a book, I often look at who is on the cover. And I look to, and, you know, complimenting the book, the little blurbs. And I often look to see if they're all people who are all the same or if they're many different people. And I was pretty impressed by the people who found his work excellent, because half of those people we've had on the show, including Bruce Lipton on the cover, and many of the Dr. Shealy multiple times, and many other authors that he refers to. Now, I'm very happy to have the opportunity to talk to Dawson Church. Welcome, Dawson.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
This is such a huge topic. It's almost difficult to know where to start. You touch on so many things that just, the way you pull it together just fascinate me. I think we should start with epigenetics again. But your chapter on the fascia, as an osteopathic physician who's used his hands, the DOs have been talking about fascia for a century, and it's to read your chapter, it was like reading right to my heart. But let's start with epigenetics. My dogma, all through my medical training, really up until recently, even in the journals, was that the genes were the director that directed my life and directed how I was formed and directed everything.
And absolutely. That's the old dogma.
That's the old dogma. And, of course, we've come to a completely new understanding. Help us.
Well, the old idea was that by mapping the genome, we would know exactly how we worked, because each gene builds something in our bodies, a protein of some kind or another, either a structure or a functional protein. So we thought that as we mapped these codes and the proteins they code for, that we would gradually know more and more and more about the processes, the physiological processes that were occurring as a result of gene expression. What wound up happening was, though, that the mystery became deeper, because there are these genes that are being expressed, but they're like recipes. And we assembled all 24,000 genetic recipes of the human genome, but what it doesn't tell us is who's deciding whether we bake zucchini bread or chipotle, you know? Who's the director? Who's directing the show? Who's deciding which of these genes it gets expressed? And that's epigenetics. That's the science of the factors from outside the gene, often from outside the body, that determine which of those 24,000 genes get built.
So the influence is from outside the body.
Yes. And the reason why it's from outside the body, when you think about it, is fairly simple, because as human beings were evolving in this environment full of threats, full of opportunities, our ancestors needed a system for rapidly responding to whatever was happening out there, outside of them. So if there was a chance to, say, get food, get a vegetable food or an animal food, if there was a threat from a poisonous animal or from a fellow threatening tribesman, we needed the ability to have the genes that would code for those things like adrenaline and histamine that get your heart racing, get your blood pumping, get your muscles fired up. We needed the ability to turn these things on very, very, very quickly. So this whole mechanism we've evolved over the last, 400,000 years or so is useful for that. The trouble is that nowadays we don't face many of those same kinds of external stressors, but that whole mechanism for producing the stress response is still there. It's still just ingrained. It's actually been hardwired into us. And the way we most often engage it nowadays and start building these genes, start building these proteins epigenetically is stress. When you have a stressful thought, a stressful memory, a stressful emotion, what then happens is the entire biochemistry of stress gets triggered in your body, even though there's no external environmental thing triggering it. So our body turns those external signals from outside of us into these stress signals inside of us, but also turns our own thoughts and feelings that are stressful into those same kinds of biochemical reactions. And that's why epigenetics is so important, because it's in that whole field, we're telling our bodies exactly which constellation of biochemicals to build, and we're determining what kind of a cocktail, if you will, of internal responses we're going to have.
These initial stress responses were great when the lion would come, but then the lion would leave.
Yes.
In our modern life, it's as if the lion lives on our shoulder.
Absolutely.
And this is the modern world we live in, just our day-to-day life, driving on today's roads, looking at the news, dealing with modern finances and relationships and everything else. And even when we imagine a stressor, such as in a phobia, it's just as real, and the effect on our body and the very real changes you talk about, the changes in biochemistry, the changes in nerve firing, is all just as real as if the stress was actually right presented to us.
Our body has no way of distinguishing between an imagined threat and a real threat.
And our state of emotional being, our state of how we're experiencing the world, definitely changes our physical being and the milieu in which our physical being exists, our blood flow, the biochemistry of our blood. And one way of altering who we are, how we are, and what our body is doing is by changing the experience of our consciousness or the focus of our consciousness.
Yes, initially, as you were saying, in medical school, this wasn't taught, and there was absolutely no inkling that our consciousness could be having these same powerful effects on us. So for a long time, people have thought that energy, even the whole field of psychology, was a soft science, that things like spirituality and belief and attitude didn't really matter. They couldn't be seen. They couldn't be measured. Maybe prayer was comforting to the patient. Maybe a belief change, attitude change, made the person feel better. But it wasn't really affecting their body. Only things like surgery and medication were doing that.
Yes.
Now we began to get an abundance of experimental evidence, hard science, showing us that as our thoughts change, as our feelings change, as our consciousness changes, as we have spiritual experiences and transformations, as our beliefs and attitudes change, as we pray, as we do acts of kindness, all of these things happening purely on the level of consciousness are having a profound effect, not just at the level of neurotransmitters and hormones, but the underlying level of the genes. Literally, we're showing changes in gene patterns as those things shift.
So this is changes in how the genes are read and manifested.
Yeah, I'll give you one example that was published in a journal called Biological Psychiatry recently. The experimenters took a group of medical students, and they did a whole genome scan, measured all their genes and which ones were in expression. So, in other words, which genes are turned on, which genes are turned off, okay? And they then did another whole genome scan just before their final examination for medical school. Now, you would think if the genome is fixed, because, of course, the old myth is that we have this fixed set of instructions, these fixed genes, these fixed set of recipes. We're born with them. They play out over our lives. We die with them. But that's just not so. They found that in these medical students that dozens of genes were expressed differently during the stressful period than were expressed during the resting period, the less stressful period of their lives. So stress is pervasive. It engages our digestive system, our reproductive system, our circulatory system. All of our systems are engaged when we're stressed, and so that's why so many genes are shifted based on our stress level. And of course, you affect your stress level by belief, by prayer, by attitude, by energy factors. That's why I'm so focused on these kinds of therapies as a way of very quickly shifting that whole constellation of stress genes.
We know, especially from talking to so many previous guests on the show, that the brain is plastic, the body as a whole is plastic. We know that what we think and how we think, whether we are a positive or a negative person, whether we're bitter or happy, whatever we are, tends to reinforce that same way of being. By changes by what it produces in our blood and by literal changes in the brain and reinforcing specific connections in the brain.
Yes.
So this all comes back again to what you're talking about, the energetic being a blueprint for all the other groundwork, almost a crucible for all the other physical aspects that come on. One of the things that fascinated me in your book was your reference on several occasions to the difference between speed at which energetic things happen, like electrical things, and the speed at which physical things happen, like chemical things.
Yes. Yes, and it's interesting that these things all happen fast, but our body's electrical system changes at very, very high speeds, like light speed, whereas the speed of neural transmission through our nervous system is much slower. It's roughly 50 meters per second. So we have these extremely quick systems, like our energy system, and these much slower systems, like, for example, our endocrine signaling and our neurological signaling. Now, we need all of these systems to work harmoniously together, but the ones that tend to shift first are the energy ones, and that's why when people have an energy medicine treatment, energy psychology treatment, they can have these extremely quick results. And it's dramatic, too, for much of my work is looking at Vietnam veterans and Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. We're in the middle of a major nationwide study right now using energy psychology with veterans, and we're tracking their progress before and after some treatments. And often with Vietnam veterans, they have 35 or 40 years worth of really ingrained responses to these stressors. And it's quite remarkable to see the expression on someone's face who, say, had the same traumatic memory for 40 years, do an energy treatment with them, and suddenly all the emotional charge around that memory is just gone in a way in which no other kind of treatment I'm aware of could possibly have the same effect. So when you work at the energy level, whether you're working on a physical problem or a psychological problem, the effects are often exceedingly fast. So that's why we focus on these kinds of therapies in the book. And in the book, I give examples of roughly 20 different therapies that work at this level and can produce these almost miraculous-seeming quick changes.
So just briefly give the names and tell us about the few most commonly known techniques, just so our audience knows what we're talking about.
Sure. Well, the ones from energy psychology that are best known, the one we're using with the Iraq veterans, is called Emotional Freedom Techniques, or EFT. And so there's quite a lot about the science behind EFT in the book. And it's well known. It's being used in the VA, Veterans Administration, in some hospitals. It's in use in a lot of therapy offices and quite a few medical offices as well. Other well-known forms of energy psychology are called the TAPAS acupressure technique, or TAT, and also thought field therapy. These are all described in the book. Then in energy medicine, there are some wonderful, very thorough ways of affecting the human energy field. And the one which I focus on, again, most strongly is called Eden Energy Medicine, developed by Donna Eden and her husband, David Feinstein. So those are some of the techniques that are covered. And there are many others as well, but the book tries to list, give as many useful resources to people as possible so they can actually explore these things for themselves.
There's many people that use medicine energy and various forms of energy psychology, whether they're codified in the systems or not, as well. Many healers in their practice.
Yeah, it's a very new field, and so it's not something that's really well established to where the point where there are already reliable protocols. Like, I used to get calls from people in VA hospitals saying, well, how many therapy sessions of EFT do we need to use to treat veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder? And I could give them a guess, but the experimental evidence for how many we need was very, very limited. So, so gradually we're discovering, you know, how many you do need. But the field is very, very new, and so we're still working our way toward these answers. We aren't as sure of them as we are about many of the other things. In treatments have been around for longer.
Thus, the benefits of your book. Because your book is brings together information with references from many different aspects of the field and pulls it together into a unified theme. And that's very helpful to anybody who's seeking a broader understanding of how this new field is forming. And your efforts through the Soul Medicine Institute, which I'd like to hear a little bit about, of actually, you know, data can be collected on this. There can be very well-defined endpoints that can be used. You know, people's experiences can be collected. The research can be done on these issues. Is that correct?
Oh, very, very simply. I'll give you an example of that. One of the things I do is I like to work with sports teams or high achievers, because a lot of the experimental work has been with people who are sick, physically sick or psychologically having issues. And a couple of years ago, I thought, well, how about if we apply these efforts to people who are really in peak condition? So I did a randomized double-blind experiment with some athletes from Oregon State University. It was actually the men's and women's basketball teams at Oregon State. And we randomized the two groups. We then measured how high each group could jump on average, and also how many free throws they could get in the basket from the free throw line. So after randomization into two groups, we gave one of them a fake treatment. We gave the second group EFT, and we found that the difference in their free throw accuracy after EFT, the difference between the control group and the experimental group, was 38%. Huge, huge, huge difference in performance. And again, this is a very carefully randomized controlled experiment. So yeah, you can test these things. You can test them with people's stress levels. You can test them with biochemistry, like their cortisol levels. There are other immune markers. There's one called salivary immunoglobulin A that we're beginning to test now, which is also a measure of one's stress. So there are various ways of getting, again, hard science behind, do these things work, and how well do they work compared to conventional therapies as well. So that's those sorts of experimental questions that are being asked, and I cover quite a few of those scientific experiments in the book as well. Trying to give people an idea that there really is science behind this. You know, for example, when you were in medical school, you were saying that these things weren't taught by the faculty. And I lecture to a lot of medical conferences and psychology conferences, and my goal was to have so many references, so many footnotes, so much information in the book that I could make a presentation and it would be convincing to conventional medical people. So I wanted to really make it clear that this is not fringe science. This is mainstream stuff, mainstream biology, and we just haven't really thought about how to apply it to these energy therapies yet. But now we are, we're saying, oh, there are all these good biological explanations for why these seemingly intangible consciousness-based therapies really do work.
And you've been doing a lot of presentation to large groups, many different organizations on these topics.
Yeah, I just did a presentation last month to the American Academy for Anti-Aging Medicine called A4M.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a large conference in Las Vegas, about 7,000 physicians. And suddenly the anti-aging medicine physicians are realizing, gee, if we reduce stress using energy therapies, that is a potent anti-aging factor, because stress hormones, like cortisol especially, are one of the main triggers for cell death and aging. So now that whole group of doctors is realizing the link between energy therapies and energy medicine and aging, and that's a new sort of application for this work. But yeah, I lectured a lot of these conferences, and I find that doctors are very receptive to this, if you present it in a scientific way. If you're just doing it as sort of a general description of energy and medicine, it may not fly. But if you have the references, if you have the studies, especially the genome studies, and we showed that the genome is literally being triggered by these kinds of therapies, then that's evidence that it's pretty hard to contradict.
You have to speak their language.
You do.
Yes,
if
you want them to listen.
Yes. And science is the language. It's the metaphor of our civilization that is most compelling, and so that's why I use it.
And your interaction with medicine, I can tell from your book, has stimulated some interesting thoughts about, I guess, the sociology of medicine over the years. An interest to me, I'm an osteopathic physician. So the history of my profession through its founding in the 1870s and,
yes.
You know, all through the last century is a fascinating, fascinating look at how ideas interface with a strong consensus reality that
yes.
are ideas that are outside it and what happens and how new ideas are brought into the fold and interesting stuff.
Yes, osteopathy has probably the most fascinating history of any of those sorts of professions because of
I agree.
It was accepted by the medical profession at a certain point in, what, I think in the 70s?
Yes.
Yeah, and so that was, it had a, yeah, so it's interesting to see, too, how these ideas often are heretical or dismissed initially, and then gradually as the evidence base for them builds, as people realize these things really do work in the human body, then eventually the evidence is hard to ignore, and they're accepted. But initially, of course, they're opposed.
Right, but just proving benefit through things like databases and studies, even if the way that the benefit comes about is not understood, is a huge first step. Because
Absolutely.
Medicine has a great tradition of accepting proof of benefit, even though mechanism of benefit is not understood.
Yes, and the mechanisms come later. I often would hear people ask, well, energy psychology and energy medicine, interesting stuff, but we don't really know how they work. And if you have a headache and it goes away in 5 minutes with energy psychology, you probably don't really care how your migraine went away, but if you can reliably have your migraine go away, or I do a lot of demonstrations on stage when I'm at conferences with pain patients. I'll have, you know, five pain patients up on stage, and we'll do a little bit of work just releasing the emotional trauma behind their physical pain. I will do nothing for the physical pain, just focus on the emotional trauma, again, that stress response. And once the emotional trauma is located and that charge, emotional charge behind it is removed, often the pain drops to nothing. So again, we don't know the mechanisms of all of this, but we know that it works. And again, if you're a patient, what you really care about is your pain or your other issue being resolved.
And are you now, or have you in the past, had a private practice seeing patients?
No, I talk to a lot of clinicians because I want to get as much information as possible, but I'm really focused on the research end of it. So I do, I use myself, of course, and I do a lot of work with people in public in demonstrations, but I do very, very little individually because I'm so focused on the research. So right now, for example, with these Iraq veterans, I'm collecting data from about 25 coaches, psychotherapists, social workers, and collating that to see the effects of energy psychology on PTSD. So I'm much more focused on gathering the evidence than I am on actually doing it myself at the moment.
Yes. This is Temple of Health Radio Show. Your co-host, Dr. Susan Colbin, Dr. Rick Lofheim. We're speaking with Dawson Church, his book, The Genie in Your Genes, Epigenetic Medicine, and the New Biology of Intention. We're going to take a break and be back shortly.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong. It was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plastico's were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plastico's and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plastico's did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plastico's is a bargain.
Plastico's, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available, 770-457-4677. Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.
Please join us every Saturday morning for Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plastico's and Millennium Healthcare. Our holistic medical practices in Atlanta are committed to community education. Our shows bring you national authors on topics of health alternatives, new scientific breakthroughs, and spiritual medicine.
You're back with Temple of Health Radio Show. I'm your co-host, Dr. Rick Lofheim, and I have some announcements. In 1995, Dr. Susan Kolb founded Plastico's Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery and Millennium Healthcare to create an integrated wellness and beauty approach combining traditional, holistic, and natural medicine. And I'm so glad she did, because I've been working there for the last 7 years, and I'm very happy to have my holistic gynecology practice there. I focus on wellness and menopause care. We have about 15 practitioners that practice out of Plastico's and Millennium Healthcare to provide you true complementary medicine, including the specialties of plastic and hand surgery with Dr. Kolb and Dr. Yaleth and Dr. Butts, our pain management and anesthesia service provider. We have the medical spa, including Julie Anthony, Ashley Weaven, and Cindy Stockton. We're happy to have all of our practitioners, including our homeopath, Dr. Danani, Anna Dodd, psychotherapist and hypnotherapist, Dr. Mike Greenberg, who has a very busy practice doing allergy elimination, sports, and holistic chiropractic. Also, Dr. Ford, our family practitioner, Carolyn Lawson, medical intuitive, Dr. Murphy, traditional Chinese medicine, massage therapy by Satish Nair. We're all happy to be together at Millennium and Plastico's and here to serve you. You can reach us at 770-457-4677. That's 770-457-4677 on the web at www.templeofhealth.ws. This month, we're happy to have several events to let you know about. Our Noetic Science meetings begin again the third Thursday on the 15th of January. We'll be Balancing the Energetic Aspects of the Body and the Environment, a free lecture by Brad Gould. Join us the third Thursday of every month. Where I'm happy to see that the Pranic Healing Free Community Clinic is continuing. Contact Kathy at 678-232-4447. Our radio show, every week on Saturday, coming up on the 17th, will be Stephen Brown, Ph.D., the book, The Gold Leaf Lady and Immortal Remains. On the 24th will be Ron Garner and Conscious Health. And on the 31st will be Daniel J. Benor, 7 Minutes to a Natural Pain Release. Oh, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Benor is referred to in Dawson Church's book, The Genie in Your Genes, Epigenetic Medicine, The New Biology of Intention. Dawson, when I look at your website and look at the books that are listed on the website, I know you've written many more, but I see that you've written Facing Death, Death Finding Love, The Heart of Healing, Healing Our Planet, Healing Ourselves, The Power of Change Within to Change the World, and I do think that peace on earth begins within us.
Definitely.
Healing the Heart of the World, Harnessing the Power of Intention to Change Your Life and Your Planet, Soul Medicine, I think that's with Dr. Sheely.
Yes.
Awakening Your Inner Blueprint for Abundant Health, Beauty, Einstein's Business. So first of all, thank you, because I am familiar with several of your books, not all of them, and the body of work is about what we're talking about. You immersing yourself in this work is such a, of such benefit to yourself, and through the way that we're all entangled, to all of us, has this been lifelong work to you? Were you a writer that shifted into this work?
Yes, I was intrigued by it in the early 80s, and that's when I first met Norm Sheely, and he's been a wonderful friend and mentor. Norm is the founder of the American Holistic Medical Association, and I co-authored the book Soul Medicine with Norm.
An amazing individual.
He is a truly remarkable person. And his knowledge of energy therapy is encyclopedic. He just knows pretty much everything there is to know about energy medicine. It's quite a remarkable experience to co-author with him. He just sits there and reels off endless facts and figures about when electricity was first discovered in the 1700s, it was immediately applied to healing. People immediately realized there was a healing element to this. And so Norm writes a lot about that. But I was fascinated by these kinds of therapies and the way they could produce these felt effects. People would tell you they felt better, but that there was no evidence base in conventional medicine to explain why that was, or any real understanding that feeling better might have something to do with actual biological changes in the body. So that's the picture that's emerged, and so I've been writing about this, and I've also put together several anthologies about this over the years. And some of the books you mentioned are collaborations with Deepak Chopra and Bernie Siegel and Caroline Mace and many other people who wrote chapters in those books that help put together these links between, for example, global health and personal wellness. So, yeah, I've been intrigued by this for a long time. But then I got into research more and more because I actually wanted to do more than just observe and write about these therapies. I wanted to actually push them further into primary care. And the only thing that was going to accomplish that was getting the research done. So I try to help fund research. I try to actually do research, develop experimental designs that work, like the sports one, which I mentioned earlier, apply these therapies to social problems, like the hundreds of thousands of troops coming back from Iraq with PTSD. So I've become an agitator, if you will, for more of this, and in conventional healthcare, not just to have this happening on the fringes of healthcare, but to have it happening at the center of healthcare, because our consciousness is central to our health. And the sooner we start to treat it that way and treat it as not just an adjunct to our well-being, but as the very core of our well-being, the sooner that a whole slew of health issues and also social issues will start to come right.
I couldn't agree more. On the fringes, there are people that are doing this. We're in Atlanta. You name a number of different edges where the interface is starting to happen. Give us your prognosis for the next couple decades.
Well, I'll make a bold prediction over here. Here it is, Rick.
Good, I love it.
The drug companies will hate this and try and shut it down when they realize how powerful it is. The HMOs will love it, and love this kind of approach, and will promote it. And so there's going to be this enormous clash in the coming decade between the drug companies trying to discredit energy medicine and the HMOs, which are going to try and encourage it. So that's sort of what I see as the big social force that will happen in the next while. For an HMO, for a health plan...
It makes total sense.
Makes total sense. The less sick you are, the better it is for their bottom line. So that's why...
Right, and the therapy is very inexpensive.
It's very inexpensive, yeah. So St. Joseph's Healthcare, here where I live, was Kaiser Permanente. They offer yoga classes, stop smoking classes, healthy baby classes, energy psychology classes, all kinds of classes to help you keep you well. Because again, that means you utilize their medical services less frequently. So it's a win-win for everyone. You're healthy, their bottom line improves. The drug companies, of course, have exactly the opposite motivation. The sicker you are, the more medications you're on, the better their bottom line looks. And so those are the two big social forces I see clashing over energy medicine in the coming decade.
And they are both big, powerful forces.
Yes, but the biggest and powerful, most powerful one, of course, is you and me. People who have good experiences with these therapies, and people want to feel better. They want, on the whole, sometimes a disease or a sickness or some sort of limitation helps us. And so... I'm always a little bit cautious to dismiss any kind of problem we're having as too quickly, because sometimes there are real benefits to being sort of shaken out of your cocoon by some serious physical problem or psychological problem. But for the most part, we want to feel better and get better, and so the biggest possible force is you and me. We people want to feel good. And we'll seek those therapies that help them with that goal.
Your book is just evidence of the many, many books that you and the many works that you reference in your book. That this circle of people who are understanding this are not just on the fringes, but are threaded throughout society. And as the circle's getting stronger, as the circle gets stronger, it makes it easier for other people to see and to understand. It makes it other when there are people in a city or town who are practicing, let's say, complementary medicine, who are successful. It makes it easier for other people around that area who have that to say, "Oh, maybe I could do that too."
Absolutely, and also the other big criticism of our field in years gone by was that it's not scientific. But now, as more and more research is being done, we're discovering that don't be afraid of science. In fact, science is our friend. The more we embrace the scientific paradigm and the more we actually test these kinds of therapies rigorously, especially against purely conventional therapies, we're realizing that, hey, we can see significant changes with these non-intrusive, often free, certainly very easy to apply in very basic fundamental human healing capacities that that everyone has and has access to. So science from being seen, I think, as being something else that isn't part of energy medicine. Now we're realizing if we test energy medicine with science, we demonstrate its benefits, and that's the big shift that's happening right now.
I think it was in your book that you used the term magic before science.
Yes. Well, what happens is we find a drug like quinine or aspirin, and we use it. Now, we have no idea what the mechanisms are. You mentioned this earlier, Rick, that we don't know initially how these things work, but we discover that they do work, and we start to use them. They look like magic to us. So you pop a pill, the malaria goes away, or you pop a pill, the headache goes away. Looks like magic. Only later on do we realize that there's good science behind it. And energy medicine is in the same boat right now. People come up on stage when I'm lecturing, and you know, for example, I'll take somebody with, for example, a limited range of motion in their shoulder. So I'll someone will come up on stage. I'll measure them using a little device called a goniometer, see what the range of motion is, do 5 minutes of energy work with them, and suddenly the shoulder limitation they've had sometimes for years just goes away. And it's quite remarkable to see people who, say, come up with, say, five years or 10 years of limited shoulder rotation, and you do a tiny bit of energy medicine with them, and their problem resolves. So these things look like magic to us initially, but as we're actually looking into the science behind them, we're realizing that actually it's not that there isn't science behind them, it's just that we are at the first stage of investigation.
Yes.
We don't know all the answers yet. We know that these things do work. We don't always know why they work. And that's why, in a book like The Genie in Your Genes, I'm trying to explain what some of the possible hypotheses are that can tell us what is going on when we see this kind of apparently miraculous or magical cure.
This is an example of what I see as the ignorance, egoism, and self-importance of modern man, modern science, that blinds them to seeing a lot a lot of this has been understood in the past. If you think that you just want to go down to the rainforest and just check every plant that's down there, no, you go down and ask the shamans what's used for what.
Yes.
The magic that we see as magic is science with different tools. When we look at ancient structures like Stonehenge and Chaco Canyon and other places where we think it's all magical, no, these were sky watchers. They're all things that predict the movements of the sky and the stars and so forth. It's science. It's just that we don't have the comprehension. I think part of it is that.
Yes. Yes, and we become accustomed to science looking a certain way. But 10,000 years ago, people saw things very differently, very experientially. For example, there's a story in The Genie in Your Genes about an ancient Indian sage called Susruta. And he was able to draw a detailed diagram of the human arterial and venous system. So he drew the circulatory system. They actually drew which were arteries, which were veins. He was able to sit so quietly in meditation that he could actually note whether the blood was flowing to the heart or from the heart through each major vein. Now, this is a sort of knowledge that people have had for a long time. They've been able to get quiet and really tune into their bodies. And so there is this wealth of lore from shamanism, from these experientially based earth medicines, that we're now just rediscovering, and we're realizing that, hey, this is remarkable. These guys have known this for a long time, and it's flowing together with energy medicine and energy psychology, and we're realizing that things like acupuncture, these points that have been known about for so many thousands of years, really do have value. So this doesn't look like our science, but the two are coming together as we investigate these and as we experimentally show that if people have these points stimulated, they really can have a pain reducing or some kind of curative effect. So the old lore and modern science really often show us the same picture of human beings as a dynamic, integrated whole. And as we find those leverage points that trigger wellness, they can in fact have an effect on that whole system.
Our radio show has for years now interviewed a large number of scientists that I'm sure you're familiar with. Recently, Irvin Laszlo and his book,
yes,
Science in the Akashic Field, Dr. Goswami, Dr. Kichu, the super string theorist. All of these are very, very important to understand what Dr. Laszlo calls the integral theory of everything. And I really feel that if we can really grasp this theory, that all of this will be understood within the theory.
Yes.
And that energy medicine, soul medicine, because it's really soul medicine, your previous book with Dr. Shealy, that is so important. In the Alice Bailey works, Master DK teaches us that disease is the result of inhibited soul life. So probably all of the diseases other than those that are physically caused by physical agents can be looked at as energy blockage situations, and these ancient healers that you speak about in your book simply could see where the blockages were.
Yes.
And use energy methods to remove the blockages, which are all of these other the acronym energy medicine things that are so well detailed in your book. So our goal with Rick and I and the other doctors that participate in this show is to really understand the theories, and I'm sure this is your goal too, because once you know the theory and can understand how the diseases manifest, then we just simply do the easiest and least expensive way to remove the blockages, which probably is, once the consciousness shifts, is not going to include that much, you know, chemically based medicine.
Yes, you're absolutely right about that. And one of the big integrative factors here is this word we use often called stress. And one of the things that I focus on my lecture at medical conferences is that stress is a good concept, overarching concept here, because stress, if we're stressed, every single physical system is engaged. And when you're stressed, there's a massive flow of your body's resources away from your immune system, away from digestion, away from reproduction, away from all these, mm-hmm. these sorts of systems to your peripheral muscles, to your heart. So all of these, stress is this big picture factor that affects every single bodily system. And this is the opposite of the way in which, for example, drugs are focused in their mechanisms of action. A drug company gets a patent on a drug. It's like a bullet hitting a bullet. They're trying to find a molecule that affects one of the molecules. What energy medicine does is we're not looking to affect just one molecule. There are 100,000 proteins in your body. We're trying to shift, you know, you find that energy blockage, and then the whole thing shifts. And mm-hmm. so as we are able to apply these therapies successfully, we find that entire body systems change, not just a few molecules. And this is just the opposite kind of approach. Whole body, whole soul, whole spirit, whole energy field, wellness, a much bigger picture than just trying to find which molecules out of whack, whether you have too little serotonin circulating in your brain and too much dopamine. We're looking at the whole big picture here, and what I find is that all of these systems come into balance once you find that energy block you refer to, Susan, and shift it.
And recently I've had a couple of personal experiences where a huge amount of energy has come in, not because I was with a healer, not because I was trying to do anything. I was simply watching TV one time, listening to Obama's speech before the election, and a huge amount of energy came in. And when this energy comes in, you realize that there's a whole section of manifested realities you know nothing about. Mm. And when this energy comes in, physiologic changes occur, as well as a great sense of peace, just physical changes occur. And I didn't even realize that this could happen. I mean, it surprises me.
Well, I'll give you an example. Every morning I meditate,
mm-hmm.
and I also get into heart coherence when I meditate. And what immune studies have shown is that if you get into heart coherence, 5 minutes of heart coherence
mm-hmm.
in the morning produces 4 to 7 hours of elevated immune function. So we know we feel good. We know we feel inspired. We know we feel centered. And those are metaphysical terms we use. But what we're now beginning to realize is that there are these literal biological changes, like this big boost in our immune system that happens at the same time. So that's the exciting thing, is we're now showing medically that there are shifts as we are in the middle of these energy and consciousness-based changes, that there are correlations in our physiology.
Well, it's just incredible to me as a, you know, I've been an energy healer for a while, but to understand that these things are our natural, I mean, birthright. They're things that even doing 12 years of this radio show, reading a book a week and you know, studying this intently, there are things that I don't know and that are wonderful and that are very healing. So I think it's a very exciting time for energy medicine. I think we're going to discover a lot that we don't know, and it'll be an experiential discovery, not just an intellectual discovery, which is always a lot more fun.
Definitely. In one of the last chapters of the book, I talk about the X factor. So there are all these predictable things that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the mystery, you know, just being in the mystery.
Right.
Being a human being a spiritual person that is living out this physical life to the best of one's ability. When you have that, when you truly seek to bring your soul into every single question, when I was asking some friends at New Year's, don't make resolutions. Ask what your soul's resolutions are
mm-hmm.
for your mind and your heart and your life in this next year. That's the stance to take. So when you approach life from that perspective, that the mystery is unfolding and manifesting through your life in unpredictable ways every day, and that as you have a sense of fidelity, not that you can trust God, but that God can trust you, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that you're available to spirit, you're available to the divine, you're available to the mystery, that you're available to live your mystical experience on earth, then suddenly the whole picture changes, and things you wouldn't even imagine could be possible begin to open up for you. So the X factor is something I emphasize in the book as well. When you come into the space, suddenly things can happen, the picture can change in all manner of unforeseen ways.
I really agree with that. I think sometimes when we go through our list of what we want, you know, our prayer list, so to speak, we limit what can be gotten to us. We limit what consciousness can bring into our lives.
Yes.
And so I really appreciate your comments about how to think about your resolutions. Perhaps just opening it up and saying, remove the blockages to love's presence in my life. Something as simple as that.
What a wonderful prayer. Remove the blockages to love's presence in my life. I think I'll use your prayer. Thank you.
And please do.
I agree. I think I'll use that one also.
Yeah. It
doesn't have to be complicated.
No, it doesn't. And I look forward to a time when medicine doesn't have to be complicated. Right now we enter into these kind of battles with the insurance companies and these economic factors and these drug-drug interactions, drug-herb-supplement interactions, you know, on and on and on, all the complexity of what we have to deal with. I'm a plastic surgeon, so, you know, we just have immense, complicated, realities that we deal with every day, and I really don't think it has to be that complicated.
Well, if you start the day with the baseline of meditation, the most effective stress management mechanisms I found are to start the day with meditation, and then have something you do during the day once your emotional equilibrium is disturbed, when you get upset mm-hmm. about something. So if you have those two things, if you start the day by being in the mystery, and then as things arise during the day to push you out of that centered space,
mm-hmm.
if you have some way of bringing yourself back quickly, whether it's meditation, whether it's thinking about the name of the saint, whatever it is you do to bring yourself back there, then suddenly you find yourself living this life where you begin each day in that space, you spend most of your day in that space, you return to that space at night before sleep. And as we start to pattern everything we do based on those inner soul directives, then our outer lives start to look very different, and things become easier, things unfold more easily, our health becomes better. There are a whole slew of positive relationship, community, and personal things that can flow from that. So I really respect your emphasis on that as the place to start, Susan.
Absolutely. Susan, thank you very much. I think we all need that daily time in the morning and the evening and a way to connect, as you're describing. So powerful. And when we spend enough time doing that, even if it's hard at first, when we spend enough time doing that, eventually that becomes our baseline.
It becomes addictive, actually. You get addicted to how good it feels, and so then you want to do it more and more and more. And it's actually quite hard to shift your baseline biochemistry. But what I've seen as I looked at, for example, people's cortisol levels, is that if we give them these tools, then we have to use them effectively ongoing, that even really fundamental physiological processes like our stress hormone balance start to change after a few months.
I would also highly recommend group meditations. We've been in the center. We do a group meditation every Friday evening. And it's just a very, very high energy time that a lot of the things that are questions in my life are answered from an inner guidance, which I think is quite important. When you have peace about the big questions in your life, then suddenly all the little stuff doesn't bother you so much. Have you ever noticed that? It's
right.
Really great.
Puts it into perspective.
Right. Well, Dawson, we're coming up on the last few minutes of our show. Would you mind giving your contact information once more and any words of inspirational words, as Rick would say?
Well, as far as contact information goes, we are recruiting people for our Iraq Vet study right now. And if you know of a veteran, a Vietnam veteran or an Iraq veteran who needs help, this website is a wonderful free directory of therapists and resources that people can use to get that help. And that website is called stressproject.org. So stressproject.org. And then the website for the book is geniebestseller.com, G-E-N-I-E, bestseller.com. But that has links as well to the nonprofit information, to the research, and so on. So those are the two main places. As far as a word of a closing comment goes, my great passion is to see people love themselves. We are so hard on ourselves, so self-critical, so much self-judgment. And as we shift these energy patterns, what can blossom is a whole new sense of living in a life where you absolutely love and adore yourself and don't feed yourself all these negative messages that you used to function on. So whatever it takes to ease your heart, to ease your spirit, to bring your soul fully present into your body and your mind, grab it with both hands and do it. Don't wait even a day or a moment. It is so important to have that impulse of spirit pouring through your life and so transformative of everything around you that it's not worth compromising in any way. Just jumping in there and doing it as powerfully as possible. When you fall and fail, pick yourself up, start again, and keep on doing it. Believe me, it's well, well, well worthwhile.
Thank you so much, Dawson. I'm taking that to heart personally. This is Temple of Health Radio Show. Your co-host, Dr. Susan Kolb and Dr. Rick Klofein, are very pleased to have had Dawson Church in his book, The Genie in Your Genes, Epigenetic Medicine, The New Biology of Intention. Thank you, Dawson. I hope we could have you back another time.
I'd love to. Thank you.
Everybody have a great day.
You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plasticos do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plasticos to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plasticos made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plasticos surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plasticos?
Plasticos is in Dunwoody. Plasticos is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plasticos number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.
I'm sick and tired of always feeling sick and tired, and I don't want to take a lot of prescription drugs to feel better. Isn't there a better way?
Millennium Healthcare offers natural solutions to your health problems. Millennium Healthcare is qualified healthcare professionals working with you to restore your health and wellness. Whether it's a caring physician, one of our natural providers, or our natural apothecary, Millennium Healthcare can help. For more information, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012.